Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Anavision podcast. This is episode 324, our not E3 2022 video game news special. I'm Jero, joined by Steve.
What is it?
Omro.
What's going on?
And welcoming this guy back to the podcast, Vo Shizzle.
Hey, what's up, guys?
It's great to see. Great to hear your voice. Great to see you're doing well, and good to have you back on.
Yep, yep. Thank you.
All right. So, within the span of the past 8 to 10 days or so, we've had quite a bit of game news from Microsoft and Bethesda and a lot of other game companies as far as stuff to be expecting. One thing to note is that usually around this time at E3, we expect all the big companies, but EA wasn't a factor, Ubisoft wasn't a factor, Sony wasn't a factor. They had had a state of play like a couple weeks prior, I believe, and Nintendo also has yet to show any more details on like Breath of the Wild 2, whatever the title of that game is. But in the meantime, there is still plenty of stuff. We start with the Xbox showcase, and Riot Games made an appearance and showed that all of their titles, including League of Legends and Valorant, among others, will be coming to Game Pass on PC and mobile, with, in the case of Valorant, like all of the heroes or agents unlocked and all of that stuff. So that was quite a surprise to see Riot partnership with Microsoft.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I mean, I play League here and there. Yeah, I think one is it going to be on the Xbox then? So I use the Xbox controller to play that game now, or I think that they're trying to get it on console.
Yeah, in the labeling at the end, they were careful to specify PC and mobile, so nothing coming to console, which would have been neat, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we'll open it up to more players, but I think that kind of game style, like, it's still a little hard to do on a console, as far as, because there's so many buttons on the. At least for me, I don't really use the controller as much, but
right.
But it's kind of crazy. You get 159 League of Legends champions on the lot. That's a lot of characters. Mm.
Mm-hmm. I really think that League of Legends type of games just those kind of like MOBA games just don't lend itself well to console, so I'm not surprised. But I mean, I think this just shows you kind of the more value of Game Pass, right? I think Microsoft is probably making money out of their asshole with it, right? And so they're just like, why not just keep trying to, purchase more titles, get more companies involved in it? And I think that's showing. And it'll be interesting to see other kind of studios move to Game Pass and whether or not, I guess, I know EA and Ubisoft all are trying their own stuff, and so they probably don't want to put too much competition in it, but it's kind of like Streaming Wars, right? Mm-hmm. Streaming Wars started, we got Netflix, the big daddy, and then everyone started jumping in, and slowly, like, a lot of these little ones started dying off, and now we're kind of having an established group of apps, I guess you could say, streaming services. And I'll be curious to see whether or not that's kind of the same avenue that games end up taking, where there's a bunch of them, everyone tries them, and then eventually it kind of settles into a few.
Yeah, because I know Riot's making, they have rumors of making a new MMO RPG. They have a 2D fighting game that would use the League of Legends characters that should be coming out, kind of Street Fighter style, but using obviously League characters. So they got more games coming out for Riot. I was surprised at them because I've been curious about their MMO project they're working on. But yeah, Overwatch, get all those characters. So mm-hmm. I guess that's what. I haven't played Overwatch in a long time either.
Yeah, I haven't either. But,
like, two beta, they tried. And to them, it's like, it's really nothing. All you do is add an extra character to some of these modes, but I don't know. It's weird to slap a 2 on it and call it a day.
Yeah, at least, like, what we're seeing right now with the beta and with Overwatch League playing on the early version of Val 2, it doesn't feel that different. But it seems like with this announcement that it does feel like it'll be a much more fresher experience come October 4th when the game goes into early access, because they're going to move to free to play, which a lot of people have been asking for. We're going to get free new heroes at launch. We've already seen Sojourn. They just revealed Junker Queen, and then there's a new Fox character that is going to be a support. There will be a season pass model, so the cycle is apparently going to be every 9 weeks that they're going to add various content and stuff, which I think is big because ever since Echo came out in Overwatch 1 in April 2020, the issue is that we got nothing since then, and I think the big thing for players is just a steady stream of some kind of content and no loot boxes. The game was incredibly generous to players as far as getting items from loot boxes for leveling up and getting coins so that when new events came with skins, you could just spend your coins. You didn't have to buy loot boxes. I mean, I went like years without buying Overwatch loot boxes because there was just no need. So, yeah.
I think the loot box thing is kind of a twofold thing. First off, EU, a lot of regulations and stuff they're talking about with loot boxes. So why not just get ahead of it and, you know, remove them? Makes sense. The other thing is, the reality is, the reason they're getting rid of loot boxes is because they really want that season pass money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're giving out free content or free, if it's a free to play game, and they're giving out free skins and stuff with loot boxes, I mean, until new heroes come out, it might not even be worth the season pass. I think overall with these announcements, like obviously me and Jero, huge Overwatch fans, played it a lot. I don't know, like the free to play aspect does get me go, oh, that's nice. I don't have to go drop, I don't know, $40, $60, how much they were going to originally charge on the game. I don't have to go do that. I can actually get to try it out. My issue is, I kind of feel like the same as a lot of people in that we're getting three new heroes at launch, and it's, I don't know how much is that enough for me to be excited. Like, three heroes, one of each type. I mean, Sojourn, we've seen her play quite a bit if you watch any kind of League or any of this stuff. Not super exciting for me. Junker Queen, the stuff they showed about Junker Queen, pretty cool. I liked her. The Fox, obviously, we haven't seen it all, so it's just more speculation. But, like, three heroes is not enough to me. Like, if they were to drop, and I know this seems weird to say, but like six heroes. I mean, a minimum of six new heroes right at launch. I think I could get excited for it. Like, I could totally be like, oh, there's a bunch of new heroes for me to try. Not like three heroes, which is like, I can go in one weekend and I've tried all the heroes, right?
Hmm.
You know, I know they're going to be retuning a lot of the characters, but like, they still play very similarly a lot of times. I don't know. I'm just
32 characters play right now.
Yeah, so I'm not super excited about these announcements. Again, the fact that it is free is nice. I will say that the Junker Queen video that they release is pretty cool to watch.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I did like is it's very clearly establishing three additional characters they could easily introduce into the game at some point. So if you haven't seen the Junker Queen, I definitely a video animation. I mean, it's like all their animations. Blizzard just is great at them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So definitely recommend watching it, but I don't know. I still have very, very tempered expectations for this. Who knows though? Yeah. It might just be my love of Overwatch. I haven't played in like a year. I'll get into it and be like, oh man, I love it. But it's still a little disappointing.
Yeah. I think I'm still looking forward to it. I think what it'll end up being is that I won't play it the same amount as I used to with Overwatch 1, where I was kind of getting in there daily to play games. I think it'll be more casual for me. And free heroes at the start, I'm okay with, just as long as the forecast in 2023 shows, like, more heroes over the span of the year in more maps and stuff. I'm also, you know, I've only seen Push in action. I didn't get into the first beta. I'm hoping to play the second beta. I'm kind of curious about Push and stuff.
Yeah. Also, I would also say there's another question about how much is it going to cost, right? Like, the Battle Pass sounds cool, but realize, this is basically a yearly thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even not even a yearly thing. It might be every season you have to buy a new Battle Pass. Like, we don't know anything about that. Like, especially if I'm going to be casual about it. Like, if I'm having to pay, you know, $20 to $30 for each season, I wouldn't be very happy. If it's like a year for $40, I mean, I could be down for that. But like, it is very much turning to the game, even though it says quote unquote free to play, which sounds great. The fact that we paid what, $40 for the other game, and we had all unlimited content for, and admittingly very limited content after a while, but still, it was free, right? For the fact that we only paid $40 for it. I don't know. I will say that the Battle Pass cost is, and how often it is, whether or not it's like a yearly thing or like every season thing, is something that's going to very much, like, I need to see that first to get a full opinion on this.
Mm-hmm. All right, so moving on, Diablo. We saw some gameplay of Diablo 4, and one of the things to note about Xbox's showcase is that they were adamant on saying all the stuff that you are seeing here, it's going to be playable within 12 months. So seeing that about Diablo gives some kind of expectation that by like next June, we would be able to play Diablo 4. And related, Diablo Immortals came out, and it has been quite the conversation around the gacha aspects of this game. I've seen a lot of, you know, people spending $15,000 just to get this 5 out of 5 star gem or something like that. Diablo Immortals has been making a lot of money, but for the very wrong reasons.
Yeah, so cool. You gotta spend all this money to have the cool armor set. That's crazy to me. Yeah.
It's all about them whales, you know?
Right.
You find those whales and then milk those players.
Yeah.
they must have a lot of whales because I think they made like $75 million since launch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not been very long at all. So, I mean, I think it speaks to the nature of these type of games where you have some people that are, like, I guess trying to defend it by saying, well, if you don't like the monetization, you don't have to play it. But then when you think about it, like, the design of the game has changed to fit or to suit the monetization aspect of it, right? So, like, you're not playing a pure, like, experience, right? Like, it's always going to be tainted by the fact that they designed it in such a way to make it impossible to get max out stats or characters or whatever without eventually putting down some kind of money or spending 100,000 years playing the game.
Yeah.
And, like, I think one of those things to understand as well, there is somewhat of a an asterisk in that there are probably a ton of people that play this game that don't understand they're getting ripped, right? I think we tend to be in that little bubble where we follow game news, we keep up to date on this stuff, and so we're in it. We're in the shit, right? We understand it. But there's going to be a ton of casual players that just, they say, oh, Diablo's on my phone, let me buy it, and let me do the gacha stuff. And they're not going to sit there and do the math. How often is it going to take me to buy this shit and, you know, be super high level? They're just not. And I think the fact that they earn so much money is just unfortunate because that there's no incentive for them to change if it's working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People can be sit there and stand on their soapboxes and be pissed off, but as long as the money is rolling in, why change, right?
Right. The new drug I saw was like, don't y'all have credit cards?
Yeah, that was the old, like, don't y'all.
Instead of the cell phone thing, so it's like, yeah, you got credit cards. I'm spending a lot of Diablos are.
I like when the game came out. I remember going back and watching some of those old videos from the press conference. Oh, you know, the red shirt guy who came up and was like, "Is this an out of season April Fool's joke?" He was the hero we needed.
The guy on stage was like, he died right there. Jeez.
Yep. All right. So, go ahead.
Oh, and I just wanted to add one thing to Blizzard's thing, like. That to be fair, I felt was somewhat unfair of the people being mad, because I don't blame Blizzard for wanting to do a mobile game for Diablo. I really feel like Diablo was an easy choice to do mobile game, and they shouldn't really be criticized for, you know, deciding to do that. I mean, they're still making a Diablo game for PC, but they're just exploring other avenues. I just think the outcome of it was unfortunate. With some of their decisions.
Would you play Overwatch if it was on mobile or no? If they can make it work.
Again, Overwatch wouldn't work on mobile. Like, the type of game it is just wouldn't. Any kind of top-down shooter game like Diablo works on mobile because there's like a million of them already, right?
Right.
So it works because of what the gameplay mechanics are. You know, if they put Call of Duty, which they, you know, they've had first-person shooters on phones and things, I just started interested because I know some people, their phone is their life. Mm-hmm. But for me, if I want a first-person shooter game, I got my PC, I got my console. Yeah, that's where I can do it.
Yeah,
or Switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like something like Call of Duty, it's like, it might do okay here, but like in other countries, it might be hugely successful.
India is all about that mobile life.
Forza Motorsport, they revealed... some gameplay from their next... This is the racing sim. Horizon is the more open-world exploration-type game. But for Forza Horizon 5, they did reveal the Hot Wheels DLC.
That looked awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Hot Wheels game that came out. And that's fun, but seeing like actual like full-size cars on those tracks. It seems pretty hilarious.
Yeah, you played Unleashed, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was Unleashed game. That's okay. Their role system sucks, you know, as far as getting the good cars, but, but yeah.
And then we had Persona make an appearance on Xbox's conference with Persona 3 Portable, Persona 4 Golden, and Persona 5 Royal coming not just to Xbox, but to PlayStation also. And on Xbox, it's going to start with Persona 5 Royal on October 21st as a part of Game Pass. So that'll be fun because I don't think I barely played Persona 3 Portable. So I'm kind of looking forward to playing that one on Game Pass.
Yeah, I need to go back and play that, the female protagonist route on that one, which was the big, like, that was the big... addition to Portable, but Portable was my first time playing Persona 3, period.
Okay.
So I just went through the mail route, and by the time I was finished with it, I think I moved on to 4 and went from there. But the most hilarious thing about all this Persona news, it's not coming to Switch, and Switch fans are mad.
Yeah, it just seems like such a slam dunk. Like,
hey, this though. This news kind of makes me more wondering and interested in if some of this, like, because, I mean, these are portable games, right? Not super hard to run.
Except for Royal.
Well, except for Royal. But, you know, some of these are more portable games. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering whether some of these decisions are also in line with the idea that maybe eventually we will see some sort of Game Pass on the Steam Deck. And
oh, yeah.
That could be pretty dope, having some access to some of these games there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know they were talking about getting it to work on Steam Deck through like some back channel way of streaming you know, Xbox Live cloud service stuff to it, but
right.
that could definitely be a real big win to see these titles there.
Then we had Hideo Kojima make an appearance on the Xbox showcase, talking about cloud technology and the next game that he's working on. And I mean, that was basically it. I mean, we know nothing about what this new game is other than he'll be utilizing cloud tech.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm here, bye."
Yeah, but that's all I'm saying. One of those things mainly to kind of show like Xbox like strengthening their relationship with Japanese developers. Try to get some kind of presence, I guess, if anything, going over there. But then afterwards, a lot of people were kind of curious about like Sony and Kojima Productions. They put out a tweet saying that they're still cool with Sony, but there's no word on if this game is going to be like multi-platform or whatever. So people are weirdly upset about it.
We'll make sure we provide a link.
Yeah.
To the
petition.
Petition to take down this to stop this game from happening for all the hurt Sony fanboys.
Speaking as a Sony fanboy, I still haven't played what was that last game?
Death Stranding.
There you go. Yeah. I was gonna say the Norman Reedus game.
Walking Dead UPS game.
Yeah.
And then Starfield, we got a big gameplay showcase of that. Little bit of gun gameplay. Some cool information about the ship that I really liked was that you could build your own ship, you could have your own crew members, and then you could fly the ship. And they were showing like a ship they made going out into space and going into combat, and kind of sounded like this kind of No Man's Sky thing where there's thousands of planets and that you can explore all of them. So you know, it looks really cool, but it's a lot of big promises they'll have to deliver on.
Right, it's a lot to like. They show off. It's like, good luck, guys. I mean, track record's not really that great like, recently, but yeah.
Yeah, Bethesda's been. I feel like it's a two different gut punches here. Bethesda's been kind of failing a little bit as of late with the last few titles, and you also have the fact that. Yeah, No Man's Sky was such a disaster, and everyone's got that kind of taste in their mouth, and this is pretty much like kind of like No Man's Sky's with more guns. So I don't know. I'm interested. It's got my eye, but I'm definitely gonna feel like this is one to wait to see if they actually do deliver or not. But at least it looks promising.
Here's a question though. Did anyone here actually play No Man's Sky?
Yeah, I played some of it early on.
So I've heard that it's changed a lot since launch. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any interest in actually, you know, like going back to it and seeing if it's any better or, you know, like how it's changed? And, you know, they announced the fact that like they're adding VR support and stuff like that. Does that have any draw for anyone?
Yeah, I've had some friends recently ask, so I could see me like reinstalling it and playing. Like it was like. Even though we couldn't see each other in the universe and stuff, we were still in party chat, just like talking about playing a game, and it was still like fun, even then, when the game was like immensely disappointing. So, I probably should reinstall and play that. So hopefully that'll be out by next year. We already know of the delay for Starfield. That was a few weeks ago. Moving away from Xbox's press conference, we got a Final Fantasy VII 25th anniversary stream. They revealed some stuff, including that the remake Intergrade is now on Steam. It was previously on Epic Game Store. And then they are remaking Crisis Core Reunion coming later this year to all systems, including the Switch, which was a surprise inclusion to me. But I really liked that PSP game from 2007, so I'm looking forward to playing that again. That was one of the few genuinely great games on PSP.
I've never played any of them, but I know the characters. But they all look really nice. Like they remastered them. That one's like looks good. I don't know anything about it, but
yeah, Crisis Core is a game that a lot of people have been wanting for a while now. And even I remember back when like Vita was the main Sony handheld, right? Couldn't download it. And I think they had issues with the fact that like Gackt was a character in the game, you know, so they had a famous person, his likeness in the game. So I think that's just not a good idea in general, like, because it'll kill your ability to re-release the game in the future if they don't want to sign back up.
They do something that you go, oh shit.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. No, that happened. That actually happened with one of the Yakuza games.
I mean, even if you look at the fact that
the guy got arrested for cocaine or something like
that. I mean, there's other cases of that too. Because didn't Kevin Spacey be in one? Wasn't he in one of the Call of Duty games? And
oh yeah, they.
That's a big yikes.
Yeah.
Very. Especially now in the age of remakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they ever remake that Call, I think it was the futuristic Advanced Warfare one.
Yeah.
If they ever do that remake, they're going to be like, well, we got a new guy to play the evil president dude.
Donald Trump. What?
It somehow made it worse.
Yeah. I don't know if it's worse, to be fair.
I guess.
Kind of. Oh.
Yeah. And then getting back to Final Fantasy Rebirth. That is going to be the next chapter in the remake series. And right now they have a time frame of late next year. So in a fantasy world where all the release dates stick, we would have Crisis Core late 2022. Final Fantasy 16, it's like summer 23, right? And then Rebirth later that year.
You said it was winter 2023, which wouldn't that be early?
December is winter.
I always consider winter to be the first part of the year. It says it's slated for winter 2023 release.
So what?
Who knows what that
means?
Yeah,
I would be surprised if it was that soon. Like if we were playing in February.
I still consider it a winter. If you say winter to me, that means like January, February. Maybe they meant like December. I guess that's technically winter too.
Kingdom Hearts in what, 2030? The new X Men, Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Okay. And then some news, kind of separate from any event stuff. God of War is still on track for 2022. Jason Schreier, reporter for Bloomberg, made that report because we really haven't seen any kind of firm release date for God of War Ragnarok. We haven't seen, you know, much gameplay, many features. You know, we're kind of getting to that point where we're so used to getting these release dates a little further out ahead. But they say it's still on for 2022.
We did get a little bit of a trailer. So, I mean, very little. But, you know, there was something there. I'm definitely very excited about this game. At the same time, I don't think I would be upset if it was delayed. I know that's a controversial thing to say. But there are actually quite a few games coming out this fall. I feel like it's one of those scenarios where something's going to get missed or overlooked or forgotten because of so many good games coming out. So
yeah.
I kind of wouldn't be that upset if this one got delayed. Yeah. Even though I think out of all the games coming out, I think this is the one I want to see the most.
Yeah.
But still, I think a little delay wouldn't hurt it.
Yeah. And I can't remember if we ever talked about the original reason for a delay. Is that Christopher Judge, who voices Kratos and does the mocap, he had in 2019, he had like back surgery, like hip replacement. Like he was saying like he couldn't even walk, and that he was saying that on his Twitter that the game was delayed because they were waiting on him to recover from his injury and surgery so that he could get back. So it was originally going to be like last year, but yeah.
Pretty awesome though when you think about that, because I mean, while I mean anyone could stand in a mocap suit, right?
Right.
And they could always just revoice it over. So the fact that they're waiting for him specifically is it's great. I think that's kind of the kind of thing we want. But it could also be kind of a nice way for them to say, you know, we're waiting on Christopher Judd. But the reality is they just need more time.
It's like, oh, yeah, there's these features that, you know, we could put in now. You know, we got time. And then The Last of Us, it is the first game, part one, is getting a remake. It is coming out September 2nd. And there's a whole video showing like the differences between the remake and the 2013 release. And it's priced at $70. So, you know, what? How do people feel about like the pricing? And do you feel intrigued to buy the game again to play it? This doesn't look exactly to me like a Resident Evil type situation where those remakes feel like they're bringing them into a different era where like with RE2 and 3 you're playing these like very old style games, and a lot of them have been modernized for like the, not just the 4K 60 FPS, but like the engine of the game is very different, whereas this one it kind of looks to me to be still very similar to what we played back then.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the like one of the trailers that kind of put them side by side when you get the shots, like there's no doubt in my mind, it looks a hell of a lot better, right? I mean, we're still talking about what, a 10-year-old game.
Yeah,
but the question is, like, is this like, do we classify this as a remake? Like, in my mind, when I hear remake, I think like of a massive overhaul change, kind of like what we've seen with Resident Evil, right? This feels more like a complete upgrade. And I think they're slapping the remake on it to make it go like, it's a remake, but it's more of like a visual upgrade, which is awesome. But $70 is steep for that. Especially since, you know, how many times have we replayed it? How many, you know, have you gotten the HD version? Did you get the upgraded HD version? Yeah. You know, like, it doesn't feel like a game I would even remotely go out and buy. I would just wait a couple years when PlayStation inevitably puts it on their, you know, free games library or give it out for free, and then I will pick it up. I just think $70 is just too much for a game. I can guarantee you I've replayed at least 3 times. And again, I just like the visual upgrades are awesome, but like what happens when the PS6 come out? Are we going to get the Last of Us Part 1 remake HD upgrade? You know, it's like
finally. It is funny though, because that made me think of the Resident Evil, the fact that they're already remaking Resident Evil 4. And the new one is 8. So, like, are the remakes going to catch up to the newest game in the franchise?
Yeah. But to be fair, Resident Evil 4, that game came out in 2005.
Oh, yeah. No. And I'm not arguing against the remake of... I'm actually really excited for Resident Evil 4. I'm actually playing through the other games in anticipation of that. But, you know, like, to me, it's for the Last of Us... That's a game that I played once. It was in the weekend that it came out. I mainlined that game and finished it and was like, this is my experience with that game. I didn't play the PS4 version when it came out because I didn't care. I played The Last of Us Part 2. That left a really bad taste in my mouth. And now the only way I'm going to play The Last of Us Part 1 is if it makes it so that I never played The Last of Us Part 2. And that's not going to happen. So I just, I don't know. I
labeled it part one just to remind you of part two.
Exactly, right? Like, you can't even just play it as its own thing anymore. It's part one.
All right, so that was a lot of the big game news. I remember the Summer Games Fest, Jeff Keighley, I think he had come out before, and he was kind of setting expectations for people, saying like, oh, you know, we don't have like the, you know, it's not going to be like the biggest thing, which for him basically means there's no From Software game at the event. but it did kind of like Summer Games Fest, like there's all right stuff, but nothing too exciting.
I do feel like the last couple of years, game announcements, maybe this is just a personal thing and maybe I'm just getting too old. Game announcements haven't been as exciting for me, or they haven't felt like, there's been no title that I've seen that I've been like, oh shit, I can't wait, right? I do think there are some awesome sequels coming out, like God of War, but I don't know if there's been any title that's truly, I mean, maybe that's also a symptom of the fact that, you know, almost every game coming out now is just some sort of upgraded, retooled, or different type of, you know, ABC, you know, of a different game. So yeah. I will say that not being excited feels more like the norm. I don't know how much they need to warn us ahead of time.
Yeah. Like Starfield could be that game, but then, you know, we mentioned the No Man's Sky comparisons, and, you know, it's almost like we're cautiously optimistic more than super excited for games.
I do think there have been some very large notable flops in the last few years that has put a lot of more people on edge, at least people I know and talk to. Who knows, maybe there's a lot not like me, but more on edge in terms of releases and more cautious about certain things. So
all right, so we have a review of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, Shredder's Revenge. This was one of those where it was announced during that whole week of events and came out pretty quickly. So I played it on PC. Amro, you've been playing on PlayStation. How was your experience with it?
It was great. I mean, the game looks amazing. You know, it looks retro, but at the same time, it has way more colors and action on screen than a retro game could ever possibly have. There's a lot of amazing animations in there. The fact is, it's simple, but it also has a lot of like mechanics to the gameplay. But it's just fun to play, right? But the best aspect of it is, you know, you jump on party chat with your friends and you go into co-op, and it supports up to 6 players. And the real best part of it is that people can jump in and drop out like at any moment, right? Like they made it super easy to find your friends. I imagine the experience is the same on PC and stuff, but you know, on the PlayStation version, you boot up the game. If your friends are playing it, it shows you their party. You just join it and you just drop into the game and you know, no lag whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's really like, you know, we played the arcade mode and finished it in one sitting. It took about like 3 hours, something like that. We started around 6 and it was like 9 o'clock by the time we finished. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then, you know, that was just the arcade mode. There's also the story mode. It's got a bunch of challenges and stuff. So it's, you know, got like some replay value to it. But yeah, no, I really recommend it. It's totally tubular.
Yeah, I appreciated the multiplayer aspect of it, because there was one point where me and another guy got disconnected, and it was just super easy to get back in and join the host mid-level. So that was good. You know, I played just with 3 players, but I'd imagine even with 6, like, you know, there's a lot of action going on the screen, everybody using their specials and abilities and stuff, but, you know, no frame rate dips at all. Super enjoyable game. The challenges are going to be the thing that'll keep me, like, coming back to playing, because I do want to complete all of those, like, complete the level unharmed, avoid obstacles, use traps to defeat enemies, all that stuff. So that's where the replay value comes in. And also, while not the same, it's if you complete the level 16 with each of the characters, you get a different ending. And it's not like exciting, like a different it's just like specific to that character, Michelangelo and stuff. I played a little of Casey Jones last night, and he's pretty powerful. Like, he's got a wide, like, super ability, and it kind of like drags in people. So that's fun, and I'm looking forward to playing a little more. I'm hoping I can get a 6-player party at some point with some of my clan mates. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how 6 players do it, and it's like how laggy your video is gonna be.
Mm-hmm.
6 players, all supers are going off left and right.
Yep. All right, and our final discussion here. We're gonna talk about the Halo TV series that aired on Paramount Plus. I've only watched 3 episodes, but I'm okay with you guys spoiling any specific details. What are your thoughts on the show?
You had some.
Yeah, so I think one thing to kind of, I guess, start us off with is I do want to set certain, like, at least there were a lot of people that were somewhat upset when watching it because it deviates quite significantly from the games. And that was one of those things where I was watching it at first. I was like, they were on Reach, and they were talking to Chief, and I was sitting there like, wait a minute. Didn't the first Halo game start after the fall of Reach? And I feel like it was one of those things where it really, I think it's trying to really differentiate this is not the game. This is taking a lot of inspiration from the game, but really kind of heading in its own direction. And I want to just go ahead and say, I'm fine with this, right? I'm not going to necessarily comment on what I, like, at this point, about the comment of or the my thoughts on the story as a whole. There's obviously, I've got issues or certain things I will mention later, but I do think the concept of taking this and not trying to be completely hamstrung by the games is fine. And I think it's fine because, first off, let's be realistic here. Very few games have in-depth story. Most of the time, you've spent running from point A to point B shooting shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So trying to adapt that into a show would probably be pretty terrible.
Yeah. It almost seemed like a good idea out of the gate to take his mask off or take his helmet off just so that people could, like, get over it after a little while. Because that's going to be, like, the big thing that people talk about. It's like, oh, you know, Chief took his helmet off, and he seems like a different dude.
In the series, he's kind of constantly doing it all the time. So you get to a point where you're like, okay, I get it. No more helmet. I got you. Only put it on for the series trip.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. You know, they kind of, he would be wearing it 1 minute. There's a joke, like, he turned, and then he's, he'll gone. So it's like, why even bother? It's just a problem at this point. Just like, hey, look, that's Halo. Look, they got a helmet.
So that's actually one thing I do want to comment on, though. Because I do actually hate that. I've got no problem with him taking off his helmet. I just think by doing it right off the bat, you ruin something, right? Like, It reminds me often of something that really pisses me off when I watch a lot of these superhero TV shows, where constantly you have superhero A, and then suddenly he gets to a point, he's like, all right, take off my helmet because you got to see my face and let's talk. Like, why? Like, that's one of the reasons why I really loved the Batman. Like, the only time Batman took his helmet off was when he was taking his suit off. He didn't, you know, go to Catwoman and be like, all right, let me take my helmet off so we can have our conversation. Like, and that's something that even Christian Bale did a lot too at times. Like, I just think it makes sense to let characters be the character. And I think I had some hope that they would at least, like, I didn't want his helmet on the whole time. I definitely feel like having him take his helmet off brings more human to the character, and I think that's important. But I think this season somewhat failed by just initially right off the cut, you know, right off the bat, helmets off, we're talking. And
right. Yeah, episode 1, probably, right.
Yeah, and they didn't give us time to show us Master Chief. They didn't give us time to show us the soldier part, because part of the thing that makes Master Chief such a great character, even though he's faceless, right, is the evolution when you see him be like this hardened soldier to a guy that's willing to throw away the universe to save Cortana, right? And I think that's evolution is very important, and I think the show kind of missed that. Like, I almost feel like season one, a lot of the focus should have been on, here's Master Chief. He's a soldier. He's somewhat heartless. He's, you know, he's not quite human. And then start to mix in these more human elements instead of just going like, here's Master Chief. He's a soldier. But in the first episode, he's already learned to be human because he touched some relic.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I felt like they jumped the gun on that. And I felt like that was one of the biggest flaws in the show.
I was confused. So, like, you know, in Mandalorian, he kept his helmet on the entire time. Or, you know, some scenes. So, you know, season two, idiots. But well, they're able to show he could do that with a helmet on. You know,
I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head there, Frosh, right? Like, the Mandalorian did it in such a way, when he finally took his helmet off at the end of season one, that final episode when he took it off injured, it was a moment, right? Like, you felt it. You were like, holy hell. Even in season two, when he took his helmet off, because even though it was everything to him and his identity, he was willing to throw it all away to find Grogu, right? It was, again, a moment, because they set it aside to be a moment. I'm perfectly fine with them not going the full Mandalorian route, where it's like, you know, you might get 10 minutes without his helmet off for the whole series.
Right.
But I think they should have at least stuck with it for a few episodes. Make that first moment of, here's Master Chief. Here he is taking off his helmet, showing who he is, and just kind of made it that moment of like, damn. Like, you know, and I think that would have put more emotional impact on it. But again, after the first episode, he takes it off, and like, I don't think he puts it back on for more than like a minute for the next three episodes.
Yeah, he's like carrying it constantly under his arm, like it's a, again, like right. It's a trophy or something. Like,
yeah, he needs like a motorcycle helmet bag so I could just kind of tote it around easily.
Yeah, I felt like they're just kept it around, like getting running. You know, it's Halo, it's Halo. Like, yeah, I get it. You know, we're watching Halo. And the other Spartans, you know, they did a good job with them. I like those, the other Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to make one of the other, I guess, the other girl, I guess she took the thing out of her spine. She was acting kind of crazy, you know. I thought that was cool. I think he did a good job with her and the other Spartans, but Master Chief, yeah. For the few fights you got, I mean, it is cool, the visuals. I mean, watching them fight the aliens first episode, that was pretty awesome. And then the finale, and I think in the middle they fight the aliens again, but they don't fight them very much, but I think that's another complaint people had. You don't get to see the Covenant as much as you'd want to see them, but they gotta set up the human story. You know, the human side, how they're struggling. I would have loved to see more of the aliens as well.
Definitely agree that the action scenes were very well done. I do also agree that there weren't not as many as I would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the action scenes, I think the reason why I wanted more of them is because I do think the story was somewhat lackluster at times. Like, I agree that the Spartans, I liked all the Spartans. I thought they were interesting characters. The one that you were talking about, Kai, that we removed it from her spine as well. I liked her quite a bit. I thought she brought good balance. But the thing that made me a little confused at first was, again, the whole concept of, it felt like Master Chief was different because when he touched the artifact, he got shocked. And then here's Kai, who didn't touch the artifact at all. And she's just like, hey, Master Chief's doing it. I can do it. Like, it felt a little bit weird that they kind of, because again of that aspect of the story. But overall, I definitely think the other Spartans, I did like them, and I can't wait to see them kind of more of them. Although, I think one of them may be dead. I don't know. They all got out at the end, if I remember correct. But I think more than anything, the story that really failed on me was the secondary story with Quan Ha, right?
Yeah, her story, yeah. Oh my god.
Like, to me, the whole Madrigal storyline felt out of place. Like, I thought maybe that the whole Madrigal storyline was there because at some point the Covenant was going to come back and it was going to play like an integral part in that future of whatever happened. But no, you know, she had an episode, she killed the bad guy, and they are not seen again.
Exactly, they're out. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So it's like her story could have almost been completely cut, right? Once he handed her off to, I can't even remember his name, the other Spartan guy, Soren.
Yeah, Soren.
Yeah, when he handed her off to Soren, he could have just handed her off and moved on. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm definitely, like, there's parts in the story that just don't make a whole lot of sense. And I felt like, I definitely think that every time it was her story, like every time they were doing stuff with Quan Ha, I was just kind of like, all right, I'm disinterested. Let me look at my phone and do stuff. Mm-hmm. And every time they went back to the Halo stuff where we got to see, you know, the UNSC and the Covenant, I was like engaged and I was actually quite enjoying it. So like even some of my more harsher criticisms, I do think, especially later on in the season when we got to see more of Master Chief, I can't even think of her name. The other girl. Mackie.
Go ahead, sorry.
Our character's name was Mackie.
Yeah. That character is like, oh, I don't know about this character. But then a certain scene happens, you're like, really? We're doing this? In a Halo series? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I mean, Master Chief is always stuck in the suit. Let him get some.
Yeah, no, it's a little weird. I mean, I know they quickly fade to the next morning, but it's like, oh my god, this is happening. We're getting a sex scene in Halo. Like, okay, well. But yeah, I mean, like I said, they're doing their own thing. I can kind of get behind that. They're doing their own thing with the series and the characters. Taking familiar characters and kind of doing something different is interesting.
Yeah,
and I do like the little touches of the Halo game. They put like some of the sound effects in there. The HUD pops up. The sound effect started to show. That was cool. And then you get a little bit of the Halo theme when he's like having those visions with the alien girl, and you can see the Halo ring, sort of a little bit there and there. But like I like those moments like that. Like they kind of put the game themes in there. And that was a good touch. I mean most. Game adaptations don't really play it, like sound effects from the games often, but yeah.
And I think the last two things I really want to mention. First off, Pablo Schreiber. Well, okay. I guess three things technically. Pablo Schreiber killed it. I think he was really good as Master Chief, and I really liked him. Thought that was good. And then kind of like the other thing is, I really did think that they did a pretty decent job, and this was my other kind of real complaint. Once they introduced Cortana, I do think that they did a pretty good job in that kind of relationship with Master Chief and Cortana. I loved that they were at odds, because I felt like in the game, right, I can't even, to be fair, I don't remember Halo 1's story all that well, but I don't ever remember other than when Cortana went crazy because, you know, whatever. And she was really, it was more of like a crazy love thing, and they were, you know, emotionally connected. But we never got to see that part of a relationship where I guess they first joined up and there's this kind of hatred almost between them. I mean, we get a little bit of that with the weapon in the most recent game. But I think it's very cool. I loved how they did that kind of relationship aspect. I definitely think that once Cortana got introduced and we got more of a back and forth was pretty well done. So,
yeah, and they said they were pretty good. Like I said, eventually they, you know, worked together. And they feel like kind of earned friendship between them now. Like now they might trust each other a little more because, you know, they're trying to do their own thing. And if I'm not mistaken, it's the same voice actors for Cortana, right, in the game. So. That's another good thing, bringing in like the actor from the game for that Cortana, at least.
It is a very tenuous relationship, to be fair. It's definitely, like, even at the end where they get a little more, I guess, close, it is definitely a relationship that's not super great. I will say, I don't know. I'm okay with it. I'm curious to see about season two. Like, the other point I wanted to make, and this is my one major concern here, right? First off, it looked great. All right. They did a great job with sets and with graphics. Like, it looks amazing.
Vehicles and, like, Jeeps look really good.
I personally was impressed with how they presented the Covenant in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like massive monsters. I thought that was really well done.
And they looked good. They didn't look like, you know, Sci-Fi Channel or CW kind of stuff. They looked like legit. Right. But the kind of point I was making is, this is my big concern here. They spent a lot of money on this show.
Oh yeah.
They even went ahead and renewed it for season two before season one aired.
Right.
It's great that they're showing all this commitment. I'm still concerned that, you know, if season two doesn't pan out, doesn't get the showing, the show gets cut. It's definitely a potential for that. Maybe Microsoft will throw money at it with all the money they're making with Games Pass. but I don't know. I do have that concern. I still recommend, like, if you have any, you know, love for sci-fi projects, and, like, I also want to mention this now that I was thinking about it. My parents watched Halo and they loved it. They didn't have a lot of the biases coming in that we had when video games.
Right.
So I definitely feel like there is a show there, and I definitely feel like it's worth watching. And yes, it's not a 10 out of 10. If you listen to our last episode, expectations, you know, if you want something that's enjoyable, worth your time, I don't think it's, you know, this is 8 episodes. I think it's worth, or 9 episodes. I think it's worth watching for 9 episodes. There's some very solid stuff in it. Some solid action.
Yeah, my dad was watching it for a while, yeah.
So it's good enough. I mean, obviously the one big drawback is you need Paramount Plus. You may not have it. There's some great deals going on for it. And there's some actually pretty decent shows on Paramount Plus. The new Star Trek series on Paramount Plus, Strange New Worlds, that show is a 10 out of 10 Star Trek show right there. I'm telling you, it's so good. Like, they get the point. But so there's some good stuff on Paramount Plus. So I definitely feel like if you haven't done it yet, like, it's not too bad to, like, you know, pop in, get a month, clear through a lot of the catalog that's good on Paramount Plus, and then, you know, move on from there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, if you have Amazon Prime, you can get a lot of those Paramount Plus shows. That's where I watch Halo. Amazon.
I think you still need a Paramount Plus subscription on Amazon, but you need it, like, through Amazon or connect it to make it work.
Yeah. That's what my dad did.
I do think that you get a couple episodes free on Game Pass, right? Is that where you watch it? Maybe.
My parents had subscribed to Paramount Plus, and I had a profile.
You live with your parents, right? You know,
you're all in the same people, you know? I went over there on Thursdays, and I would watch with them.
Yeah.
All right, so that sounds good. I'll have to finish that at some point. So, with that, thus concludes episode 324 of the Anavision podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Anavision.org is the website to go to for all our podcasts and links to Discord and all that stuff. And I think we have a busy stretch of podcasting potentially, because the last of the spring anime shows are going to be ending, including Kaguya-sama Season 3, which is big.
And we're pretty psyched about it.
Yeah.
A lot of the shows. We're watching a lot more anime, so it's the stuff we actually want to discuss.
Yeah. And then then the summer 2022 anime preview, a little after that.
Which has some pretty okay stuff.
Yeah. I'm not
blown away here, mm-hmm. but, you know, there's definitely some winners.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So do stay tuned to the Anavision podcast. For Steve, Amro, and for Shizzle, I'm Jiro. We will see you next time. Believe it.